And Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for the Advocate, Picayune, is with us, and he's here to talk about the week that was. And yesterday on this show, we had Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, and now I see that he's tested positive for COVID-19, Mark. And the Lieutenant Governor, of course, is another guy with immense energy. Could lose a few pounds, but he has COVID-19, and I don't know if he knew it yesterday, but he sounded hale and hearty on this show. But as we know, what in America right now, in our country, 27 seconds, every 27 seconds, somebody's dying of COVID-19. Dying. So it's serious stuff.
Well, so, yes, he's already got a couple boxes checked off on his COVID bingo card, and so this has got to be of a concern for him. So was he in studio yesterday,
Jim? No, he was not.
So you don't have to quarantine for a while. Anyway, so, yes, I think what this says is that that this disease, despite the deniers, and they all seem to want to email me wretched emails about how this is all faked out, but it's hard to say that this is all fake with so many people dying and so many people catching it.
And we have people who say coronavirus is fake, and they say the election results of 2020 on November 3rd were fake. And one of those is Jeff Landry, and as Sam Carlin notes in his story today in The Advocate regarding the governor saying it wasn't fake. So far, all the Louisiana delegation, short of Bill Cassidy, and that includes Garrett Graves, our congressman in this area, they all are refusing to acknowledge Joe Biden as the rightful winner of the presidential election.
Yeah, no profiles encouraged there. But I think what we're seeing is that they are looking at a large percentage of their base being so pro-Trump and believing everything that the president says that they see no benefit in jumping out ahead and doing as Bill Cassidy did, which was to acknowledge that Joe Biden has won. My guess is that come January 6th, when Congress officially accepts the electoral votes that happened earlier this week, then they'll begrudgingly acknowledge Joe Biden as our next president.
Here is Governor Edwards yesterday on his 57th Ask the Governor show, giving his assessment of where we are right now.
Well, it was obviously fruitless because the Supreme Court summarily decided not to even entertain the pleading that was filed out coming out of Texas. And quite frankly, it was unfortunate. Look, I'm a lawyer. I know our courts exist to resolve disputes, but the dispute needs to be real. And if there were real evidence of the kind of voter fraud that has been alleged on a scale to make a difference in the outcome of an election where there's a 7 million vote advantage for one candidate in the popular vote, 306 to 232, I think it is, in the Electoral College, you would think that in all the weeks since November 3rd that they would have been able to produce some evidence of that. They haven't produced any, and I don't know of a single significant court win, state or federal, anywhere in the country. And so it just seems to me that it's well past time that individuals accept the outcome of the election. I mean, that's what democracy is all about. You always have to have a winner and a loser, and the democracy is best served when the loser acknowledges the defeat, gracefully exits, and then works to make sure there's a smooth transition.
All right. Well, the governor is stating that the ghost should be given up. We heard Foster Campbell a month ago on this show saying it is over, O-V-E-R. But you're saying that the political consequences, at least the feared consequences, that's probably what's keeping these Louisiana Republicans from saying the obvious, that Joe Biden not only won, but he won by a fairly big margin.
Yeah, I think so. I wasn't able to hear what the governor said, but I think that he wasn't that different from what I was saying. I think it's politics, you know, and and they didn't. That's about it. So.
All right, Gustavo in Goodwood. Gustavo, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. You guys know Stacey Abrams from Georgia?
Yes.
Did she ever concede?
She did not.
Okay. So,
she did acknowledge that Brian Kemp was the governor of Georgia, though. She did not concede.
Did she concede, though?
Now, but has Trump acknowledged that Joe Biden is going to be the president? He doesn't have to concede to do that.
You know, it's really...
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering what your point is.
She said that there was election fraud. And it's a legitimate question, Gustavo. I'm not shooting you down. It's a legitimate question. But she did acknowledge that Brian Kemp won and that we had to have a peaceful transition of power. So shouldn't President Trump do the same thing? Shouldn't he be man enough to say Joe Biden's the president?
He's not.
He's not?
He's not the president, not yet. That was complete fraud. How can you say that pedophile, decrepit
pedophile,
if he can present just one scintilla of evidence, then you would persuade me. But so far what we've seen in over 50 trials and court cases is that not a single bit of evidence was presented. And so, where's the money?
And I believe Gustavo to be a learned man, but to buy into this kind of BS is disappointing, to say the least. Patrick in Innisfallen Estates. Patrick, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, Mark. Okay, so moving forward, I guess what would you support a federal, like I think all elections in every state should meet some kind of federal guideline, because what concerns me is if you have one state that has voting that's, you know, we don't know where the votes are coming from. It can affect the whole election, and that's what the whole Texas lawsuit was about. I mean, would you agree that maybe we need to look into some kind of standards that every state should meet so that we know that the people voting are the actual people voting and not, and that they're voting uncoerced?
Well, in the Constitution, it's set out as a state and local. You know, and maybe that should be a conversation that we have to have. But the reason it was set out as a state and local effort is because they didn't want, you know, California and New York, which could do it, to selecting the president. Or at the time that they wrote this, it would have been Virginia and New York.
Right. But in the system we have now, though, the biggest cities in America are neglected, not even visited by candidates. New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago. They're all forgotten because those states are known to be, in this case, blue states. And then, of course, you've got the Texas cities that are largely forgotten, too, which are huge. Houston, Dallas, Austin, San Antonio. No president visits those in an election year because it's given that right now that Texas will go red. But we'll talk more with Mark Ballard about the beat going on as we approach January 20th. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. The erudite Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for the Advocate, is at your service. Let's go to Sabash at the Country Club of Louisiana. Hi, Sabash.
Good morning, Mr. Inkster. Good morning to your guest. We don't seem to take this seriously, the attempt of coup. Next time, these people will not make the same mistakes they made this time. This is the last time, and if we don't rewrite the Constitution, I don't think we will have one more chance. Thank you.
All right, it's highly probable that President Trump will be on the ballot again in 2024, Mark.
That's what I keep reading. And
if his health allows.
I'm sorry?
If his health allows, he is 74 and obviously has some health issues, and that might preclude it. But Joe Biden will be 82, and who knows, we might have a rematch.
Yeah, or Biden may be a one-term president.
He might be, and if you believe
not, people, not that I'm casting aspersions on the abilities of octogenarians, but he, I mean, at 82, he may decide that he's done enough. But I'm not altogether sure that it was so much of a coup as it was them using, and as they're allowed to, you know, every single facet of the law that they could.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with Mark. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Yeah. Is the behavior of our Republican congressional delegation analogous to a losing football team blaming the refs rather than admit that their team was led by a misogynist bigot unable to again con enough voters to win the Electoral College?
All right,
you know, so, I got to agree. When Alabama came in here and beat us, 51 to whatever it was, I'm pretty sure they cheated. You know, I saw some things on the internet that would suggest that. But ever since I was 3 years old, I've been told that Alabama cheats, you know, so therefore they must have. There could be no other reason why they would have beaten LSU so much. On the other hand, despite all of this, finally, did you notice at the end of the game that the players from both sides shook hands and a group of them kneeled together in prayer? I mean, I think that's what we teach. You know, it's what I told my son is that, you know, if he gets walloped and he doesn't go over and shake the guy's hand, then I'm going to wallop him. So.
Well, I recall it was, I think, Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein who reported it in the final days of Richard Nixon. In fact, that was the book, The Final Days. The 37th American president was talking to pictures on the wall of other presidents, and when Henry Kissinger walked in on him, he said, "Henry, let's pray." And Nixon prayed, and ultimately on August 9, 1974, he departed in a gracious manner. Now, what led up to it was far from gracious, but on that day he was a good American, as he was when he lost a very close race in 1960. But Nixon in 60, Humphrey in 68, Gore in 2000, Hillary Clinton in 2016, those were close elections, and not one of them claimed voter fraud. And in this case, we've got an election that was not close, the margin of difference about the same as George Bush the first beating Mike Dukakis, and yet our president continues to shout from the rooftops, voter fraud, voter fraud, voter fraud. And he has people like Garrett Graves and Steve Scalise and Clay Higgins and Mike Johnson and Ralph Abraham and the new guy, Luke Letlow, all saying, "You're right, Mr. President, you're right." Rebel in Sherwood. Rebel, good morning. You're on with Mark Ballard. Hi, Rebel.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Jim, if possible, I'd like to just correct your previous caller about Stacey Abrams. The fact of the matter is that Kemp at the time was serving as Secretary of State in his own gubernatorial election. And he deleted people from the voting rolls. He moved polling places. He deleted vote polling places. And that is why.
Well, okay, but she did not concede. And she made a point of saying that this is not a concession speech. But she didn't say, "Look, let's try to keep
overturn
this,
the government."
Yeah, overturn the government. That's right. She did not do that. She did it the right way. She got mad and she went out and got people to register to vote, and that probably made the difference.
And that's the way we started organizing. And that's why things changed in Georgia. And hopefully, something like that can happen here in Louisiana sooner rather than later. But thank you, and thank you, Mr. Ballard, for the work that you do.
Right. David in Atlanta. Hi, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, after over 100 Republican congressmen signed on to the amicus brief to give Trump an election with no legal or constitutional basis of any kind whatsoever, based on any facts of any kind whatsoever, I never believed I'd ever say this, but I can now understand how the German Reichstag, I think it was in 1933 or 34, passed the Enabling Act with a supermajority, and the Reichstag was elected by the German people to give Adolf Hitler dictatorial power. We're living in dangerous times.
All right. Thank you, David.
Mark. This is all the downside of democracy, though I don't think that it's quite as dire as is being painted by our friend from Atlanta. But this is what democracy is all about, you know, and it's never been clean. It's never been tidy.
Jonathan... Verrett writes, one caller suggested having more federal oversight of elections. He writes, I'm strongly against this idea. As Mr. Ballard stated, the Constitution clearly reserves the oversight of elections to state and local governments. In addition, I was actually relieved that the federal government was not able to interfere in the elections. Otherwise, a savvy populist like Trump could have put even more pressure on states and would have had a much better chance of overturning legitimate election results. It amazes me, writes Jonathan, that small government Republicans are chomping at the bit for more federal meddling in elections. That's an interesting oversight.
Yeah, he makes a good points there.
Okay. Let's go to Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil.
Hello. Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Ballard, thank you for your series about the insurance company. You must have touched a nerve because Jim Donilon and some other people jumped in. Yeah, good article. And could you go further and just find out just how crooked it is? It seems like our state is basically in Exxon's pocket and for the insurance companies. Thank you.
A lot of people say so, and what I found interesting is that the insurance companies basically were attacking me personally over a calculation made by a firm in New York that used a different formula than was used than what they said in committee, in legislative committees.
All right, and today the headline in The Advocate, front page, ExxonMobil plans $240 million investment in BR Refinery. That's a quarter of $1 billion. That's a lot of money.
It is indeed, and hopefully translates into good-paying jobs.
Mm-hmm. The Advocate and Times-Picayune launching statewide investigative unit. That is also front page, and I mentioned, and we've talked about in Mark, that there are fewer journalists now on the beat. Anytime something like this happens, it's a good thing. This one, though, I see is going to be supported by philanthropic donations to the Louisiana Investigative Journalism Fund, which will be administered by the Greater New Orleans Foundation.
And I think it's a great step forward, because I think what we're missing, and we've talked about this before, you think about the number of reporters that were on press row at the state capitol, which just a few years ago. And even in my shop, we've gone from 7 to 3 full-time, and I have a fourth that comes in and helps out. And we outnumber everybody else put together on press row right now. And you can't do investigative journalism if you're running after the governor every day, and I think that's what they've come up with, a business plan. Hopefully it works, that will put money into the type of investigations that change things, as they did with the non-unanimous jury verdicts.
Tom in Woodland Ridge asked if you read the response from Mr. Donilon to your story. I think the op-ed piece, it was in yesterday's paper, wasn't it?
Yes, I read it. I read it before he sent it to me first, and then I recommended that they run it. Well, he's certainly entitled to his opinion. Again, the point is that this was a story about the cost of living in Louisiana, and this was one facet of the formula that they used to come up with the cost of living, mm-hmm. which was spelled out in the article.
Now, The Advocate has been accused, as have others, and it just goes with the territory when you do stories, as you did an investigative piece on Jeff Landry and his business dealings. But the other day when it was announced that his top officer as far as investigating criminal activity was under investigation, The Advocate did not put that above the fold, as you could have. It was a story, but you put it, I think, on page 3 or 4. But nonetheless, that's a story that is worthy of public consumption.
Well, I think so. The man involved in this is in charge of the criminal division of the Attorney General's office, which, even though the AG's office primarily handles civil lawsuits against the state, that Jeff Landry uses that criminal division in a lot of his advertising. And the other issue that kind of comes out is that we know that this gentleman left for some reason against, breaking the rules. But Jeff Landry, who is, a paragon of transparency, or at least transparency rhetoric, won't say what that rule was.
Okay, we do have to roll, but thank you, Mark. We'll talk more next week. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan provide signature support.